Hello. This podcast is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast will invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered this support group, and I've been an active member ever since. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me again. Today, I have a fantastic lady to chat with, Dr. Elena Tripoliti. Dr. Tripoliti is a clinical specialist speech and language therapist. She's Greek and has lived and studied in the UK for many, many years. Currently, she's on sabbatical to look after her parents in Athens, and it is from there that she spoke to me. Hi, Dr. Elena Tripoliti, all the way from Athens. It is wonderful to have you here today. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We're supposed to have a storm, but it hasn't come yet.
Oh, well, good. Good. And let's hope it doesn't happen while we're recording.
Yeah.
Elena, will you please explain a bit about yourself?
Who I am? Yes.
Yes. So
I am a speech and language therapist. I've worked in the NHS for 23 years, mainly at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery at Queen Square, with amazing teams of doctors and nurses and physiotherapists and occupational therapists. And the last 20 years since 2000 have been dedicated to the speech and swallowing treatment of patients with movement disorders. My PhD was with Professor Limousin and Professor Marwan Harris, the neurosurgeon, in the area of deep brain stimulation and what it does to speech. And since then, with the help of Parkinson's UK, we've built the first dedicated speech and swallowing movement disorders clinic in London at Queen Square, which is going strong at the moment through my sabbatical 2 years to care for the family. So that's my story in brief. A very big passion is music, and one of my biggest achievements, I think, is to bring music and singing into movement disorders. Approximately 18 years ago, we started the Sing for Joy Choir, and I hope we can talk more about that.
We definitely can talk more about that. First of all, tell me, how did you first become interested in speech generally, and why Parkinson's in particular?
So let's start from the last bit of the question. Parkinson's is a disease that is manageable in terms of speech problems and swallowing problems. And even though approximately 90% of patients may experience a speech or a swallowing problem, there are ways to deal with it that are not always pharmacological or surgical. So medication or surgery may not help speech and swallowing. It may even make it worse, as in the case of deep brain stimulation, but behavioral therapy, speech therapy, can make it better. And we have very good evidence now for that. So the reason I became interested is because Parkinson's also causes reduced movement it gives the impression with lack of facial expression that the person doesn't want to communicate. So the challenge of getting a life story out of someone who seems not keen to tell you their life story is immense for me. It's a challenge that I relish every time. And I want to get that life story out. I want to listen what they've done in their life. And I want to validate it by, you know, most often is a wow story of their life. But it needs confidence, it needs loud voice, it needs that kind of oomph you have to bring in. And that's why I'm so passionate with this in this area, because it's a combination of factors to do with reduced movement that make people not communicate as much. And that's a crime. It's not inability, basically. It's not lack of strength or even paralysis that you get after a stroke or any other problem. It's mainly this reduced movement, reduced amplitude that doesn't allow for the story to come out and the personality to shine as it was before. And that's why I'm where I am.
And it's also interesting because Parkinson's has a processing slowness. So it's difficult for people who have PD to understand that they're not doing it. So they have to be more self-aware.
Yes, exactly right. So it's the processing issue is not quite cognitive, I mean, as in cleverness or intelligence, is a sensory processing issue. So patients don't usually understand that they speak in a lower volume. So they come to me and they say, I am fine, my wife is deaf. And every time it's the wife who's deaf. I've never had a lady saying my husband is deaf. Bless them, they all come, very rarely come, and they say, well, but the husband is always certain, I am fine, my wife is deaf. And usually the wife has gone through the trouble of having a hearing test. And bless them, usually the wife's trying to say, it's not me. Anyway, the issue is that when we talk, like as we speak, we hear our voices back with a tiny delay. They think it's 200 milliseconds or less. So not we're talking about, and that allows us to process. So we can process the loudness, whether people can hear us, whether the room is bigger, whether it's background noise, so we can factor everything in, and somehow automatically, not so automatically, now we know it's the superior SDG part of the cortex that does this processing, but it is amazing how quickly and how for granted we take it. With Parkinson's, they found out that this delay is longer, 500 milliseconds and more, which means that by the time I spoke and I process how I said it and whether other people have, it's gone, the time is gone and I'm gone to the next beat I need to say. So the effort is such to talk as well that you feel you've done your bit, you know, you put your effort, you've said what you want to say, you don't really hear how loud it was. So this gap is what we perceive as, you know, can't he understand? I can't hear him. You know, that kind of gap that makes conversations sometimes a bit awkward because there is this lack of, the timing is not correct sometimes. And
I understand that very well. My husband struggles with the volume. He thinks he's speaking normally, and I actually can't hear him, and I am not deaf. And how so, from my point of view in my life, I have to be very patient and ask him to repeat himself because I literally can't hear him. So from the carer's point of view, it requires a lot of patience. Yeah. How could I help him further? Is there a...
Yes. Well, there is. This is patience is number one. It's exactly what you said. Patience for it's a virtue for everyone, especially for
kids. Okay.
Wives, I think.
This is so funny.
number two is, when you ask him to repeat, tell him to say it louder. Loudness is the key. Sometimes people have a fast rate of speech, so they sort of start normally and then they go and it goes muddled up at the end, and you're like, whoa, what did you say? Say it slower. Don't ask them to be slow. No one can do it consciously. It's very hard to slow 100 muscles we use for speaking. You need to ask them to be louder. By definition, if you're loud, you slow down. And if you're loud, you get. Now, well, I mean, you could tell them, if voice is very quiet, could you just tell me the main point, or could you just go to the, you know? But I found that communication is about personality, and some people's personality is shown with the feelers, the small things, like by the way, or little things like lovely expressions that we've carried through our lives. And to cut those down just for the sake of saying water or is not nice. So leave it. Just say, repeat it louder, louder. Loudness is the key. Voice is the key, even for articulation issues. Even when you have patients who have this kind of stuttering, this difficulty getting through the word, get them louder and they will find the energy to complete the word.
That makes complete sense, that if you say louder, it automatically makes you enunciate better, slow down, and then I will have a chance of understanding. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And patiently getting
you patiently, gently.
Yeah.
And what about exercise? Yeah. Is exercise good for the voice box?
Exercise is the key for Parkinson's. We have now ample evidence, both for physical exercise and speech exercise. The exercise has to be based on amplitude. So it's not just for the sake of exercise. You can get on a static bike and bike all day, but you need to do some basic amplitude work, which basically means increase the movement width. So if you cannot walk with your hands swinging, do it on purpose. Do it as an exercise. Big arms. If your steps go small, get bigger steps on purpose. If your voice is louder, get louder voice. So amplitude is the key for this kind of exercise. And that is not just amplitude, it's intensity as well. You've got to have high intensity workouts. Workouts that make you feel you're working out for your voice and your gait. Mm. Another issue is doing two things at the same time. So walking and talking at the same time, or and it's not just the simple multitasking men cannot do, or even some women cannot do. It is to do with keeping safe when you walk. So the system needs to have all the cognition for the walking, basically. If you need to talk, it's going to be quieter. You don't need...
Because you're focusing on where the pavement is, where the curb is, so that you're walking safely, and to ask them to formulate a sentence as well, and to say it so that I can hear it, it's all too much.
So that aspect has to be exercised again consciously in order to get there, to be. It is possible more and more if you start early.
Yeah.
So I cannot stress enough the importance, as soon as you get your diagnosis, as soon as you in that kind of desperation, go and find a therapist, either speech or physio, but somebody who can make you in control of these symptoms and get this exercise habit in your life for yourself.
I can't remember what the therapist called, but in England, if you go to your GP, they will recommend you to a speech therapist who every day for 4 weeks will practice this with you. That gives you that wonderful foundation to understand what it is you've got to do.
And this is exactly, thank you. This is the LSVT, the Leisman voice treatment. And the website, if you want to have a look, is www.lsvt.com. lsvtglobal.com, you'll find information both about the speech treatment, LSVT Loud, and the physio equivalent, LSVT Big. And they have a list of people they've trained, because we're training therapists all over the world now. And you can find who is trained near you. But also, every hospital should have an LSVT trained if they do movement disorders. It's the golden standard we have for therapy. And it's exactly what you say. It's based on loudness, intensity of treatment, 4 times a week for 4 weeks, or twice a week for 8 weeks. That works as well. And calibration, what they call calibration, is basically realizing how quiet you speak by playing it back and say, is this really, can we do loud? And then you play back a louder voice and they say, yes, this is better. This is it. So they click, they get that gap between what they do and what they are supposed to be doing narrow, and then it clicks. It's always based on effort, high effort.
It is a job having PD, isn't it? To constantly be exercising your body and your voice, because the medication is not stopping you being ill, but all this exercise does delay. It delays the inevitable, doesn't it?
Yes, and it does work. I mean, there is case studies now and big studies showing that it does prevent, it slows down the deterioration. It does work for everyday quality of life as well. And if you want to keep your job, you need to speak.
Yeah.
To be loud. If you want to have, you know, a social life, you need to be able to have a meal with a family. And if you know, it's why miss out if there is a treatment that's working?
Yeah.
Ask for it. Yeah.
So the simplest thing is that you can just record yourself reading, play it back to yourself, and so that you can realize, oh, that doesn't sound very loud at all. And that's a way of becoming more aware of how you're coming across.
Yeah.
As you say, you know, if you're not heard, then it makes life very difficult for everyone.
Everyone. Yeah. Yeah. And it makes it sad, really. I think voice is who we are. If you think a simple question I ask our students is, what types of voice do you really like? What types of voice don't you like? Voice is so personal and so
and also for the person speaking, it's what's in it for me? Why should I bother doing these exercises? And the answer is because you'll have so much more fun in life if people can understand you. So there's a lot in it for me. You've got to be disciplined.
Yes, discipline. The same discipline people have to take the pills, you know, the same way you do that side of treatment. This exactly the same discipline for speech and gait, because these are two areas, balance, gait and speech, that don't always work with medication or surgery. So we have treatments now. We need to take advantage, and especially in the UK with the NHS, where you can have treatment for free.
Yeah.
But
you have to ask. And if you don't have to ask.
Yes, but that's all. I mean, in the US, our colleagues have to justify why this patient needs a treatment. And it's insurance and all of this is a huge palaver. But in the UK, we've got it. We have to take advantage of it.
So. Yeah, yeah. And where would people find out about this information? Is it their GP or is it the consultant?
The consultant is the best to approach, depending on your GP. Some GPs are amazing. I've worked with GPs who were really so keen and wonderful. But it depends. If you find that your GP doesn't really know much about Parkinson's, go to your consultant and ask for therapy. Some consultants, I mean, even now at Queen Square, we're just beginning to have a physiotherapist, which is wonderful, but it's a bit late, if you ask me. And speech therapy, it's underfunded. But some consultants are reluctant, some are less so. But there is a lot of evidence we can base this request on. So don't be shy. And it's nice guidelines say that LSVT needs to be provided. Then we have other therapies that have to be provided as well. Another one is the expiratory muscle strength training device. It's basically a device where you blow through. So I know you can't see it, but it basically has a resistance and you blow through. It's like blowing a balloon.
Right.
But more calibrated resistance. And that exercises the lungs, the expiratory muscles, and it has very good evidence for swallowing and saliva control. And these can be provided.
Okay, so you just ask for what do you call it?
The expiratory muscle strength training. We can have the links if you want after, but this again is good if it's provided through your therapist, just because there's a few contraindications and it's best to control the way it's done and whether it's...
Of course, we must always deal with the consultant or the doctor. We can't know what to do best to get the best benefit. We need to speak to the professionals. Tell me about your choir, because at Kensington and Chelsea, we have a wonderful lady called Nicola, and she sings with our members, and our choir is called Skylarks. Yes. Now, I know you have Sing for Joy. Yes. Please.
Yes. So singing is a cure, is therapy. And a wonderful thing is that you don't really need to convince people about it. It's not like any other therapy where you've got to explain. Singing is singing, and it does work. We have people who cannot talk and they sing, and it's a fact. And it's not just the actual singing. The voice is the being together and sharing the joy.
Yeah, and people who stutter can actually use
amazing
singing so that they can speak smoothly.
Yes,
it's extraordinary what the brain does, isn't it?
And I mean, there is all these theories about which part of your brain is activated when you talk, which part is when you sing, and you could go into all these hypotheses. But the bottom line is, it does work. If there is a lot of choirs nowadays. And all we need to do is try out which one suits our personality. It's like a song. You know, if you don't like the Beatles, you cannot sing Yesterday. You know, that's it.
That's right. That's right.
You've got to go and try out. That takes energy and motivation. But it's an investment. I find that it's a big investment for your sanity and voice and socialization, really, as going to the doctors.
Yes, and I know that when you're in a crowd of people who are experiencing similar whatever feelings of lack of confidence or whatever, to be able to sing and know that everyone else is in the same position. So if I make a mistake, it doesn't matter. And people are joyful together. They're helpful and kind and compassionate because they understand exactly what your problem is because they have it as well.
I mean, now, especially you say confidence, we have had Zoom experience of all this and Zoom choir. In the beginning, you thought, how can that be possible? But what we found with Sing for Joy is that a Zoom choir, we had one at Queen Square, which could not operate really with COVID. So even now, when we're starting getting back, it's still difficult to get that choir back in the hospital. So Carys Hogg, who's the choir leader, very happily continues online. And what she does is she asks everybody to mute.
Yes.
From herself. So you basically have the piano and the words and her voice, and you can be on your own singing with Carys at home. It's a joy. It was a lifeline for many patients during the lockdown.
Yes, this ability to Zoom has, mm-hmm. as you say, certainly for our committee, we've done mm-hmm. our best to do these mm-hmm. things. We'll give the links at the end. One more thing I want to touch on, because I know that you're very aware of this and have lots to say about it, is the family, how it affects everyone. And I may want you to just make this short, because I'd like to ask you back for another 20 minutes or so to explain to us a bit more about how everyone within the family can help the person with PD. Yes. Just give us a snippet, will you?
I think I have more to learn from you than you have to learn from me on that one. I must say, I learn every day from caregivers, from the little tricks they use to communicate, from the way they communicate is a learning experience for me. And it's always great to see people together with a caregiver.
It is a partnership, isn't it, with whoever's got the Parkinson's and the other person they're speaking to with, that both those people have a responsibility
exactly.
to listen and to speak loud enough, clearly enough, that we can all understand.
Yeah, it is a partnership, and it is a triage. It's a three-way thing. You've got Mr. Parkinson in the middle.
Yes.
You've got a big Mr. Parkinson in the middle now, and you've got this triangle to manage. And that's the key issue when we have communication problems. That what I find is education works. So explaining to people that, you know, he doesn't speak loud enough because he doesn't perceive himself as quiet. That simple piece of information makes people more understanding. Because you may think that he doesn't want to be heard, he doesn't want to talk to me, or he doesn't care, or he speaks loud enough with other people. Why at work? Why can't he talk to me when he comes back? And, you know, we all experience this kind of, when we go back home, you don't want to talk to any, let alone put any effort, additional effort into it. So you just deflate and sit on the sofa and don't talk. But explaining the effort, I have people who do marathons, all these amazing swimming, and they keep saying to me, speaking is the hardest thing, because I think not just physically it takes effort, it takes mental and emotional effort to talk.
I think that explains it perfectly. So when you're walking, some people with Parkinson's freeze, but once they start walking, it's so automatic, it's not a problem. But with speaking, each sentence that you make is a new one, isn't it?
A new one. It's a lot of emotion as well. You've got to take everything you've got, especially if it is harder physically. It really requires effort. Explaining that to the family and understanding this effort, I think, already makes the communication easier. But as I said before, I learn every time. Every couple, every relationship is different.
And to want to learn is a joy, I find, anyway. It makes life more interesting. Alina, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much. I will get those links from you, and I'll mention them at the end of this recording. But in the meantime, I hope your storm does not come, and I wish you very well, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Viv. Thank you.
You're welcome. What a lovely lady. Many thanks again to Dr. Elena Tripoliti for her time and helpful explanations and suggestions. I hope that you got as much out of today's episode as I did. In summary, as always, exercise is the best way to combat Parkinson's, and do it all bigger and louder. Amplify everything from swinging your arms whilst walking to singing at the top of your voice. And I don't know about you lot, but I have to be more patient. As discussed, you might want to look at www.lsvtglobal.com for the voice training. And this is free in the UK. Just ask your GP or consultant. Also, the expiratory muscle strengthening training, EMST. This helps you to increase the pressure of your respiratory system muscles and build up strength in your voice, just as you would build up your body muscles in the gym. Just Google EMST to find out more and discuss it with your GP. Again, you may be able to get this little device on the NHS in the UK. As always, if you don't ask, you don't get. And thank you for listening. Do let me know who you'd like to hear from and the questions that are important to you. You can email me at pliferaft@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, goodbye and take good care of yourselves. In producing this podcast, I'd like to thank Richard Smart and Emma Brzezinski for the idea, our chairman John Amphlett, who always encourages an idea, Nick F. Grave for the original music, Mike Bailey and the team at EPLS Design for the graphics and sound editing. This is a production by Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group with permission from Parkinson's UK.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.